It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host. I am indeed calling you from the field this morning, the beginning of hunting season and fishing season for a lot of people, and airplanes are not as popular as they were. So this, I've done the Great Outdoors Show from a lot of locations. I have never done the Great Outdoors Show from a junkyard off of I-80 in western Nebraska. Good morning to the Great Outdoors Show. That's where I am this morning, headed to Utah for a week of what I hope will be great upland and waterfowl hunting and hiking in the mountains. But I want to start off with a question, or a statement rather. 12 years isn't a very long time. Yet, if you were 10 12 years ago and you're 22 now, that's a lifetime. So think back where you were or what you were doing 12 years ago. I, last weekend, on the opening of the waterfowl season in southern Illinois, or actually, I guess they call it the Central Zone now, I was in the same place where I was 12 years ago with my then 10-year-old son. So let's take duck hunting out of it, and let's say you just go back 12 years, and you think about things you did with your son or daughter or your grandson or your granddaughter or a niece or a nephew 12 years ago, when they were kids. So 12 years ago, before dawn broke, we got on four-wheelers and we went out into this flooded marsh and we picked what we thought was a likely-looking spot. And we set up in the dark, threw out a few decoys. Now, mind you, my 12-year-old son was, well, he wasn't very tall then, so waders, even kid waders, came up under his armpit. And so water on me up to my knees was, you know, practically up to his neck. And I found a little high hump of ground, and I put him on that hump of ground with my dog. And at 10 years old, it's his first duck hunt. He, of course, didn't sleep the night before and stuffed himself with donuts before we left the cabin and went down to this marsh. And he's there with the dog on this little hump, and I'm standing next to them in water that's just about mid-thigh. And a marsh in the dark is a spectacular place, particularly when it's a dawn just before opening day and their wings flying overhead, their birds whistling. You can't see them, but you can hear them. You think you see silhouettes. And as I'm talking to you right now, the full moon is working its way west, by the way, west against the sky. And I can just begin to see, it's not dawn yet, but I can see clearly in this full moon. It's kind of what it was like 12 years ago. We could see the birds. We could feel the birds, but they were silhouettes and there was wind in the birds' wings. And at 10 years old, it was all amazement for my son. And even for me at that time, I'd done it lots of years, still amazing. And it became light and there were the decoys and there was the dog and teal flashed by. And when you're 10 years old and you don't shoot very fast, you need a little bit of warning. So the teal went by, the wood ducks went by, more teal went by, more wood ducks went by. And it was now getting close to sunrise, plenty of legal shooting time, and a drake pintail started to circle this little pond we were in, little marsh hole. And it circled a couple times, and I called to it, and it came in, and it was not right in front. It was out probably 35 yards or so. And I told my son, okay. And with that, he stood up on, at least half standing, he got off his stool, and he fired. And down came the pintail. And that was the beginning of my son's life as a duck hunter. His first duck, a drake pintail, that was 12 years ago. Last Saturday, we found ourselves at the same farm. His voice now has changed. It's no longer, hi, Dad. It's much lower than mine. You've all been there. And I thought, my God, how did 12 years go so quickly? A young boy on his first duck hunt, now 22 years old, driving from college to come and go duck hunting with his dad. I thought, this is just it can't be 12 years. It was like yesterday morning when I saw this. And I had the same feeling with my daughter, who's 25, and her first duck hunt was when she's 11. But in this case, we were standing within a couple hundred yards of the exact same place where we were 12 years ago, a place now affectionately called Pintail Pond, because that's where my son shot his first pintail. This time, instead of me carrying him and putting him on a hummock of dry ground, we had an English Cocker Spaniel who had to swim several hundred yards. English Cocker Spaniels are not meant to swim several hundred yards, even a few yards. It had a flotation vest on, and little Scout at 3 years old, he just went through the water, you know, just splashed. But to watch a little dog, this time under my son's control in the dark, we got to the place we were going to hunt where we thought there might be some ducks. He threw out the decoys. He set up the blind. I stood back and just thought, 12 years. My goodness, it's not possible. And he's learned so much, I think. Most of all, he's learned to be a safe shot. He's learned to be a good hunter, to try to only shoot drakes, not to shoot in other people's lines of fire, all the things you hope to teach somebody. At least he does that with me. And it became light, and this time it was me, who wasn't fast enough on the teal that went by and wasn't fast enough on the first group of wood ducks. When you're 22 years old, you have all the eyesight and all the reflexes you're going to have. And his reflexes and eyesight in that first group of teal came by, and actually was not the first because I couldn't see the first. And he was waiting for me to be able to see them. And then this group came by, and bam, he dropped one. And then bam, he dropped another one. And they were whizzing by at such speeds in the dim light that I frankly couldn't react. 12 years would do that to an adult, too. So as the hunt went on, and we had a beautiful hunt, and little Scout, this 3-year-old English Cocker Spaniel, they are not duck dogs by any stretch of the imagination. He went on and he got every duck, and he was so proud of himself. We didn't have a proper seat for above the water for Scout to sit on, so we took a metal folding chair out of the barn, and I unfolded this chair like you would, you know, if you were going to sit around a picnic table, and I placed this 25-pound dog dripping wet on it with his vest, and he sat there and he shook with excitement, not with cold. And when Trey or I would shoot a duck, he would go out and get it and come back. And it was, of course, he comes back as English Cocker Spaniel. He's just covered in burrs. English Cocker Spaniels, all Spaniels, you put them in places where there are cockle burrs and weeds, and they're going to find every one. Maybe that's one reason that a lot of people don't take them hunting. But the hunt was over. My son kept saying, Dad, this is so fantastic. And I kept saying, Trey, do you remember 12 years ago? And of course, he remembers his first duck. He doesn't remember the details of the hunt the way I do. And here we are 12 years later, and he's doing everything for me that I was doing for him. And when the whole hunt was over, we had a wonderful morning over the decoys, a couple hours in the cold. And you may remember last Saturday morning how very cold it was. It was more like early December than the 24th of October. We stood there shoulder to shoulder, and whether it's your grandson or your granddaughter, we stood there shoulder to shoulder with the birds hanging on a duck strap behind us, and just watched teal and wood ducks and mallards and pintail work over the marsh. And it was one of those moments where whether you've taken your son, granddaughter, whatever to be fishing, and they caught their first fish, and then a decade or more later you took them back, everything changed. But the one thing that doesn't change is that bond and that special experience about being with a son or a daughter or a grandson or granddaughter, niece or nephew, which is why I say so often, take a kid hunting. It changes their life, and it can change yours. So as I think back on this, 12 years has gone in the blink of an eye. I'm sure it does for all of us if we think we're 12 years ago. 12 years ago, John McCain and Barack Obama were in a couple of days going to be deciding who's going to be the next president. That wasn't very long ago. Take a young boy whose voice hadn't changed, and today he's a young man. Take that in your family. The most important thing, though, take the memories that you make going outdoors. You're not going to make them in front of a television or in front of a computer game. So many of you listening know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you haven't made them with your young kids or grandkids, go make them. It'll last a lifetime, and I treasure 12 years. I just can't believe it happened so quickly. Cannot begin to believe that. I'll be back in just a moment with much more of the Great Outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope you enjoyed that segment about watching a child grow up. Last weekend was the second year in a row that we have had an unprecedented cold front with snow and huge winds and plummeting temperatures. Was the second year in a row that we've had that happen about a month early. For years, decades, I was taught to believe that sometime around between Halloween and the 10th of November, you get your first big flight of birds coming out of the Dakotas and Canada, whether it's sandhill cranes, whether you're watching songbirds, or you're watching waterfowl. And yet for 2 years in a row now, sometime, this year it actually happened on the 22nd of October, the blow blew in. But the birds started to move on the 19th of October. Talked to my friends across the highline country of Montana and into the Dakotas and over to Rock Lake and on up into Winnipeg, and they said, overnight, millions of birds left. And once again, the radars of airports showed this massive migration. And a few weeks ago, I talked about what it's like to be outside and watch the fall colors or watch the leaves fall. And I remember many years ago sitting in the backyard of where I lived and watching the leaves just fall off a sycamore tree one day. I had my daughter in my lap when I was doing that. I'll never forget it. So we talked about being outside when the leaves fall. Well, there may be nothing more dramatic than being outside when the flights arrive, when the grand passage occurs. And it occurred last week from Wednesday to Sunday, and anyone who was outdoors from the west of the Rocky Mountains, in fact, all the way from California, all the way across to Lake Sinclair and on into Lake Erie, down through Sandusky, Ohio, if you were outside at any point during that four-day period, you witnessed, and you looked up, you witnessed a part of the Grand Passage. The Illinois River just loaded up with birds. Tens of thousands of birds arrived on the upper Illinois River. Same was true across Nebraska. Everywhere the birds were on the move. If you saw 6 or 10, you were watching part of the Grand Passage. Some people saw 6 or 10,000. And next week I'm going to talk about having seen probably that number of canvasbacks, a very special experience. Fall, it does that. Spring's very different. The migration's different. In the fall, you have this massive grand passage with the right weather, and it occurred last week. There's still more to come, certainly this fall, but the arrival of and departure of the birds from their breeding grounds, the grand passage is underway. Well, shifting from migrations and birds, I want to spend just a moment talking about water and water wars and COVID. More people have gone outdoors this year, perhaps, than any time in memory. Everything is either booked. If you're in the outdoors, you can't rent an RV. Sales are up over 100%. Licenses, rods, reels, shotguns, the whole thing. In Montana, this is causing a conflict which has been percolating for a while, but is now the real deal. In Montana, unlike some other Western states, if the water is navigable, if it's a river and it's navigable, you can be on that river and you can go up to the high water mark. If it's not a navigable river, meaning you couldn't historically float a boat down it or up it, you cannot go on that river or stream. The bottom of the river belongs to the landowner. Landowners in Montana have been improving what they thought were non-navigable rivers as private water. Now, with the advent of COVID and so many more people having come over the past few years, and particularly this year to Montana, there are challenges as to what navigable truly is and what, when did it begin and when did it end? Is it Lewis and Clark era or is it more recent? Is it last year? Is it navigable? Who defines what a navigable river is? This is going to be a profoundly important, unfortunately, legal case to play out across the West. If rivers that historically were viewed to be as private water become accessible to all of us, to the public, that on one hand is a great thing. On the other hand, it's going to hurt the fisheries because individuals who owned what they thought was private water and have spent enormous amounts of money establishing these fisheries and the fish then move all through the system in public water, etc., they won't be so inclined to do so. Because what they thought was their private fishing stream is not any longer. So it's going to cut both ways. It could have an impact on the quality of fishing. If the courts decide that certain areas that were deemed to be private are now public, it's going to provide more access, and that's certainly a good thing. One thing's for sure, times are changing across America as more and more people go outdoors in historic numbers. Thanks for being with me this morning. Again, I'm on location in a junkyard in western Nebraska off of I-80. Hopefully I'll be in the woods by the time we reach midday. The full moon is just setting. This is Charlie Potter and the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.
Yeah, that sounded a lot better.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, that sounded